With me today, I'm joined by Lexi, Executive Director of Solidarity, an awesome charity raising awareness and money for refugees. Hi, Lexi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very excited to have you on the show. We've had you on before, like over a year ago now, to talk about all the amazing work this charity does. But particularly with everything going on at the moment, I feel like the refugee crisis has really sort of fallen out of the media at the moment. Can you give us a quick update on the situation?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that you say that, because I think right in March when, you know, the whole world really was going into lockdown, I think there was this real sense of global unity and solidarity. We really all were going through this, and refugees and asylum-seekers were going through it too, and camps in Europe have been placed on extended lockdown. You know, asylum-seekers who are living in these camps for weeks and weeks on end weren't able to leave at all or access any of the services they need. And I think as the year has continued, the dangers that COVID-19 has posed, both in terms of health to asylum-seekers who are living in incredibly cramped conditions, but also in terms of access to their basic rights and legal services, has really fallen by the wayside. And it has been very challenging, especially in Greece in September. Moria camp, which was the largest refugee camp at one point, home to almost 30,000 refugees and asylum seekers, was almost entirely destroyed by fires. And the new camps, the temporary camps which have been built, that was September, right? But to this day, they don't have electricity.
Oh, wow.
So it's been really problematic, and we're really trying to do our best to keep that conversation alive in the media.
You've mentioned there a little bit, you know, the problems that come with coronavirus. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? How has that affected the refugee situation and, like you say, situations in camps?
Yeah, so I'll speak a bit more to Greece because it's where I know more about. But we've heard, Moria was a really good example. We heard reports in March, actually, that in some regions of the camp, there was one tap for 1,300 people. So when you're saying things like, wash hands for 20 seconds, stay 2 meters apart, that's not an option when you're queuing for hours at a food distribution. That's not an option where you have to spend hours on end waiting for water. So from a really practical level, social distancing and like basic public health is just so incredibly difficult in the camps, just due to the crowding and the kind of lack of sanitation. But I think also we were very aware that were COVID-19 to get into the camp, it would be just an unprecedented disaster, because the island of Lesbos had 3 ICU beds, which certainly wasn't going to cover the island's population aside from the asylum seeking population. So in March we actually we wrote an open letter to European leaders calling on them to do more to protect refugees from COVID-19, but we also gave a grant to a medical aid NGO to really try and do our bit. But you know, it's not only just that, it's also the fact that if you can't leave the camp, you can't go and visit your lawyer, you can't go to the doctors as easily, you can't seek the other services that people need. So it's been very challenging.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot before, last time you came on, about the fact that Solidarity particularly works on providing legal aid for refugees, right? Is that still happening even in Corona?
Yeah. So we did give the grant to the medical aid NGO in March, but other than that, this academic year, we are funding 6 NGOs, all of whom are providing legal aid to refugees and asylum seekers. They're working in 4 different parts of Greece.
Amazing.
Doing really incredible work at a time where, you know, it's been incredibly difficult for the NGOs themselves. Not only are they now having to try and do all of their consultations via WhatsApp, but also volunteers are having to pull out. People can't easily travel to Greece to volunteer and to access. So I think, yeah, this is almost more of a key time than ever for legal aid.
Why is it so important to provide legal aid? You know, there are so many routes you can go down to help refugees.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great point, actually. There are 100 different ways to support refugees and asylum seekers. But we have chosen legal aid because we believe it to be the most long-term and empowering form of aid that we can offer. And the reason for that is that the asylum process is at its heart a legal one. You know, the Refugee Convention is international law, and it's an incredibly difficult process to navigate without expert support. So the definition of a refugee is somebody who is unable or unwilling to return to their country of origin owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group, or particular opinion. And the really key phrase there is fear of persecution. And the asylum process is really looking that the applicant will demonstrate this well-founded fear of persecution, but it's simply not that straightforward. There are lots of people who truly have been persecuted and forced to flee their country. But when your asylum interview is months or years down the line, I mean, I personally couldn't remember in minute detail which villages I passed on the bus 2 weeks ago. I certainly couldn't remember it 2 years ago on the most traumatic day of my life. So a lot of legal aid is about supporting somebody to represent themselves in the best way that they possibly can. It's not about gaming the system. It's just about enabling people to realise their own rights and explain themselves in the way that the process requires. And if you don't, you know, if you do get rejected at your asylum interview and you don't become recognised as a registered refugee, you're simply not allowed to remain in that country and you're not granted any protections under international law. So it really is a pivotal moment.
As you said, it's a very complicated process to navigate. What are the key parts of what legal aid really means? I find that's a very common buzzword, but you know, it's quite hard to dissect. From the moment when someone comes to them and asks for help to the moment where they then are either successful or unsuccessful, what exactly do your NGOs do and what do they provide?
That is such a great question. I think actually we speak about legal aid in these very vague terms often, but I think for us, it's often three key steps. So one of those is interview preparation, where you do meet with an asylum seeker once or twice or maybe more before their interview, and you really help them to go through and gather their story, write down a timeline, gather any supplementary information that they might need. And a classic example in the UK was where an asylum application was rejected by the Home Office because at one point they said that they took sheep to graze. But another point, they said they took sheep and goats, and the Home Office pointed that out and noted that their story was inconsistent. So it's very specialist. Yeah. And often, as a result of trauma or many other factors, actually, people just have experienced memory loss from those periods. So helping them to really collect their details and the story of what happened to them is important. We also deal with information sessions. Lots of our NGOs do this. So it used to be in person. And they used to, you know, hold sessions where anyone who was interested could come and learn about the basic process, how it's going to work, what paperwork you need to fill in, what's important. That happens a little bit more difficult now, but it does still happen. And some of the other things that our NGOs work on are things like family reunification. So families who've had to flee often end up really scattered across Europe. And it's not straightforward to transfer your asylum application to another country. If you have arrived in Greece, it's not straightforward to apply in Germany for asylum, even if your mother or your brother or your husband is there.
Right.
So you really need a lawyer to support you with that process. And that's something that some of our lawyers are really specialised in and is very meaningful to reunite families.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. It must be such rewarding and very difficult work, but yeah, really rewarding. What does NGO actually stand for?
So that's a non-governmental organisation. So these are organisations that have been set up independently. They're not funded by the Greek government, and they're just working independently, really.
Amazing. So how are they adapting to make sure that they can still provide legal aid when, as you say, people aren't allowed out, they're being told to isolate, they're not allowed to go and visit their lawyers? How do they get around that problem?
So to be honest, it has been amazing. Like, the determination of every member of each of the NGOs we've supported, they have just not stopped. They have, one of the NGOs, for example, has a Facebook page where they're providing key information about COVID and about regulations. All of them are doing consultations via video call. And where possible, where the camps are not locked down, then they are seeing clients in a socially distanced manner outside, one-on-one. But I think what has made this incredibly difficult is that the Greek Asylum Service was closed for, I think, about 11 weeks. During that first lockdown. And what that has meant was that everybody who was due to have their asylum interview in that period, that basically got reset to zero. So we've heard reports where people are getting phoned on the Friday to say that their asylum interview will be on the Monday. And that just does not leave you with enough time to see a lawyer. So also, I think the NGOs are really, really trying to just reach as many people as possible in a really short time window.
It's amazing that they're able to go ahead. It's such an incredible work anyway, but to go ahead in such unprecedented times is absolutely amazing. And since we're talking of legal aid, what would you say to people who maybe disagree with the number of refugees the countries, various countries allow in?
That's a really, really great question. And actually, I really love to engage with that. I think one of the key statistics here for people who are potentially concerned about refugees and asylum seekers in the UK is that refugees make up 0.26% of the UK population. So when people have concerns that, you know, we're just not able to support a large number of people, it's just simply not the case. And also studies have shown time and time again that actually, you know, a diverse community does improve outcomes economically as well. But really, from my point of view, the fact of the matter is that under international law, people who are fleeing persecution have the right to seek asylum in a country that they feel safe in. So, and that's really the end of it. That is an international law. And so all of those arguments about whether we do or don't want to let people in inverted commas, or we do or don't, you know, have concerns about X, Y, and Z, they kind of all fall to the wayside, because it's not really about a want, it's about an upholding human rights.
Absolutely, yeah.
Drive on Phoenix FM, brought to you in association with St Francis Hospice, doing more than you think.
Let's move on a little bit now. We've talked about, you know, what work you're assisting with your funds sort of as a charity. How do you raise your money? Tell us a little bit about the T-shirts of Solidarity.
Yeah, so a lot of our fundraising is done through the sale of our custom-made T-shirts or Solidarities. and so these T-shirts feature designs that are either created or inspired by refugee and asylum seeker artwork. And through the T-shirts, we're really trying to do two things. One is to raise money for legal aid. You know, all of the proceeds do go towards our grants. But the second is to really spread awareness and create this very visual and physical display of solidarity in the truest sense. Like, if I'm wearing a T-shirt, I'm literally saying to everyone I pass in the street, I support refugee rights. And it's a conversation starter as well, because it's not an easy subject to just casually bring up, but we really hope the T-shirts do that.
Absolutely. Well, they're gorgeous. I know they're different designs every year. What's happening with the T-shirts this year? I know that they are organic and vegan now.
Yeah, that was so important to me. So they are 100% organic and vegan, and the inks that are used are all water-based, PVC-free, which is really important because that's really a polluting to the environment. And so I came across this design. I actually took a trip to Thessaloniki, which is in northern Greece, this summer. And I was visiting NGOs working there to really try and learn more about how we can best help and what's going on. And as I walked into this community centre in an organisation called Elpida Home, I just saw this life-size paper, kind of like a silhouette on the wall. It was huge. And I was told that it was created between a group of about 10 or 12 asylum seekers who had all stood against this piece of paper in different poses, and the others had traced their outlines. And then together they'd all coloured in the overlapping shaded segments. And it just, to me, really represented not only kind of the diversity of each person's like life story and journey and movements, but also this real unity and connectedness. It was very beautiful, and we had to move a lot of furniture for me to take some photos of it, and that has become the 2020-21 design.
Amazing. Well, they are absolutely gorgeous, and what an important message behind that image as well. It's really lovely. You guys are a student charity. I want to talk a little bit about that as well. Does that make it harder? Because obviously positions change a lot, and, you know, coming as a student, you're sort of more of a startup sort of style charity. Do you come across any sort of obstacles as students?
I think what's been challenging is that, you know, I don't know how to do this in the best way possible. I'm very much at the start of my professional career, and a lot of this is trial and error, right? We figure it out. But I think what that has also given us is a real ability to respond quickly. We're not particularly entrenched in like a certain way of doing things that we've always done. And because we don't know what necessarily the done thing is, it means that as a team, I think everyone's really open to new ideas. And
yeah,
I think students are uniquely in a position where we really care at this point and we really want to make change and don't often have that many routes to do it. I think I personally remember feeling like, when I get a good job, then I'll finally be able to like donate some money, or when I graduate, then I'll finally be able to go and volunteer. So I think actually giving people a route to do that now while they're studying,
absolutely,
people have really, really got on side.
Well, that's amazing. And it's so great that actually you can use being students to benefit you and really make an impactful difference. It's amazing. We've talked a bit about Corona in terms of in the refugee camps and how it's affected the process, but has it affected you as a charity at all? Has it made it more difficult to sort of, as you say, volunteering, but also fundraise?
Do you know what's been sad is that I always talk a lot about the solidarity family, and I really believe in that. I really want to create a sense of community, and I think what's been hard for the teams is that the volunteers in a certain uni team can't necessarily get together. They can't go out for a picnic, really. They can't hang out together, so there's a lot of Zoom. But I also think, or I hope, that we're still providing that sense of community in what's a really, really tough time for students, that we're still offering them something they can do that's really positive, that's meaningful, and also people, like-minded people that they can connect with. But practically, it's not been super easy from the point of view of just managing the t-shirts, because in March, when uni's pretty much shut overnight and people were just having to take what belongings they could, jump on the train, some people couldn't fit everything in the car, and a lot of t-shirts were just left in students' rooms, and we weren't really able to get those back until October. So that was very problematic, but again, it was just amazing to see how creative the student body was. Almost overnight, we had virtual pub quizzes, virtual raffles, we've even had a virtual art exhibition. And it's gone, honestly, this year has gone better than I could have ever imagined, like COVID aside. And that's really a testament to the team.
Well, that's amazing. So as you say, selling t-shirts mainly. How can people buy these t-shirts?
So we have an online shop and we ship internationally. The website is Solidarity, and that's T-E-E rather than T-Y. We have lots of different colours. We're even launching some new products in 2021, so that's exciting. But yeah, you can also, if you're listening and you're a student at a uni, you can also contact your local uni team and pick up a shirt in a socially distanced manner at the start of next term. But people that don't want t-shirts, like I feel really strongly about this, that if someone actually doesn't wear t-shirts or doesn't particularly want another one, I don't really want to feed into consumerism. We have a whole host of other ways that you can contribute. We have virtual gifts, for example. You can gift someone the equivalent of a night of accommodation for volunteers. We also have events that you can join, and I think simply just reading the website and educating the people around you also counts for a lot.
Amazing. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, how can you get involved, you know, if you're not a student? If you are a student, obviously Solidarity are a student run charity and they always need volunteers and help and stuff. But if you're not a student, there are still tons of ways you can get involved, right? And also, besides Solidarity, obviously there are tons of ways that the refugee crisis needs support as well. Obviously there's loads of ways. At the moment it's very difficult to volunteer, but there are ways to do stuff and there are ways to help. So where would you recommend people go to find more information about how they can get involved and help?
Well, our website, I would have to say, is a really good place to start. We also have some info about all the NGOs that we support so that you can read more. So we're Teas of Solidarity on Instagram, or just Solidarity on Facebook. In terms of other, I mean, there are a lot of NGO pages, all of whom are doing fantastic work. And I think following them on social media is a great way to gain access to the real information. And I think in terms of other, you touched there just on other ways that you can support as a non-student or as a student. And I think one of the most impactful things that you can do is write to your local counsellor, because I think a lot of the time what we do need is just everyone to come together and really show that as a population, we do support refugee rights, because meaningful, like long-term change really needs a lot of people to get on board and to really take a stand.
Amazing. Well, I would love to keep talking to you forever about this. I find this such an amazing charity and such an amazing, amazing work you guys are doing. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. Thanks so much for joining me today. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Thank you so much.